Of Mengimom in Beis, Omer Rav Gido, Omer Rav, who continued to discuss the brachas on Reach that we began a little bit earlier. And the question now that's being addressed is Hai Simlok. Now, Simlok, which is translated as jasmine, is a plant. So we're no longer talking about trees, we're talking about a special plant. Min Esev, sheyesh bo shalosh shuros olim zulim alamizu. So it has three rows of leaves that grow one on top of the other. Each row, bechol shura shlosha olim, has three leaves, as Rashi says it here. Is mevarchin iluye bore atze besomim. Which I'm not sure I understand why, because lechora the bracha that would be appropriate here should be borei asve besomim, because we're now talking about a plant that's fragrant. We're not talking about a tree. So what's the yesod here of borei atze besomim? You know, if for example, if we spoke about borei priya eitz, then the borei priya eitz, the word eitz is referring to the tree, but the priya eitz is what we're making the bracha on. In the case of borei atzei besamim, the word atzei seems to have a different, or maybe a broader connotation. It means it's the wood itself. So again, when we're talking about borei priya eitz, you know, we're thanking Hashem for creating the fruits of the trees. So we can only make that bracha over the fruits that grow, even if the plant is classified in a tree, but on the fruits itself. In the case of borei atzei besamim, we're thanking Hashem for creating fragrant wood. And even if you had a plant, and it's not an eitz, but nevertheless it is like wood, if the plant is hard, for example. So the question is, let's say jasmine, which is called simlok in the Gemara's language, is that called hard wood? And here we have the sheet of Rav Gidol Amarav that mevarchin alei borei atzei besamim, even though it's a plant, but it comes from something that's kosher, that's very hard, so therefore it's like wood, and it has like the same status of Aste Besomim, which means the tree or the wood that has a fragrant odor to it. So here the plant is like a tree in the fact that it is hard. But Omrav Chananel Omrav Hani Chilfei Diyama, which in Hebrew is translated as Shibolas Nerd, and that we're familiar with from the Ktores. And it's one of the 11 spices that make up the Ktores, which you can read about and learn about in Krisus on Dav Vav, and it grows on stalks similar to flax. That's how Rashi interprets it. Is Shiboles Ner Hu Tzemach Ha'osui Ki Giv'ole Pishtan. So Giv'ole are stalks, and we're talking about stalks of flax. Mevarchin alayu, when you smell it, you make borei atzei besomim. Again, kevon shehem koshim. It's like an eitz itself. So that's the case of what we call chilfei diyoma or shiboles ner. Now, some have a different translation of Chilfei Diyoma. We said that Chilfei Diyoma was Shibolas Nerd, which comes from a plant which is like Givoli Pishtan, but others seem to say that it's something called rosemary, an evergreen shrub of the mint family, native to the Mediterranean region. So we have to get in touch with a botanist who works here in studying different growths and in the Mediterranean area and see if we can figure out what this evergreen shrub is. And it belongs to the mint family, which is what we call here in Israel, nana, I think. So again, why do we make a bracha of borei atzei besamim on the reich that comes from this asev, which is called chilfei diyama, shibolus nerd, or call it rosemary if you like, when it's only a plant and it's not a tree? And the answer is, it's considered or called like a tree for this purpose is because it's kosher, and therefore the Birchas HaEitz borei atzei besamim is appropriate. And now the Gemara wants to give a proof that stalks are sometimes called eitz, even though they grow straight from the ground. Amar Mar Zutra Maikra, is there a pasuk from which we can learn that give olim, these stalks, are considered eitz? And we go back to the Parsha Meraglim, when Yoshua sends Meraglim to check out Eretz Knan before they enter the land. He comes to Yericho, he comes to the Beis Rachov, Vehi Helasam Hagaga, she brings him up to the roof, Vatitmenem, and she hides him, Vepishte Ha'etz, Ha'aruchos La Alagag. So she hides them under Pishton, under flax, on the roof of her house. The Pishton is not an Eitz, it's a Givol. It comes from stalks, and yet the Pasuk calls it Pishtei Eitz. And why is that? Because it's kosher. He says here that Givol Pishton Eino kosher Kigeza Eitz, Ach Eino Rach Kishara Sovim. So it's somewhere between, you know, the bark of a tree and the other grasses and so forth that grow straight from the ground, but it's somewhere in the middle in terms of its hardness. And therefore the Torah, the Tanakh, calls it Eitz. And from this we're going to derive a general conclusion that Eitz Kosh is considered, that an Esav Kosh is considered an Eitz, and we can make the bracha borei atzei besamim. That's what we have over here. And we're up to Rav Misharshia. So before we mention Rav Misharshia, let's just present a summary, an overview of the Ritva's understanding, the guidelines for the blessing of borei atzei besamim, which is the subject of our sugya here. And he says that there's a fundamental difference between borei atzei besamim, the word eitz, as opposed to the brach that we make on eating in the case of fruits of the trees, where again we mention eitz, borei pri ha'eitz. He says in borei pri ha'eitz, the word eitz is referring to the tree. And we're thanking Hashem for creating the tree that produces the fruit. In the case of borei atzei besamim, the word atzei or eitz refers not only to a tree, but to something which is like wood. So again, in the case of borei pri ha'eitz, if you have something that is not a tree, but rather it's plants, then you would not make the bracha borei pri ha'etz. So we would only make a bracha over fruits that grow or produced by eitz, by something that can be strictly classified as an eitz. But in the case of borei atzei besamim, we're talking about fragrant woods, and anything that's wood-like, and even if it's a plant and not a tree, is included in the understanding and the translation of atzei besamim. So for example, when we talk about jasmine, which was the case of Simlach, or if we talk about chilfei diyama, which we said was shibolus nerd, the fancy English word for that is spikenard, so none of these meet the criterion of trees. They grow on stalks, but those stalks are hard stalks. And therefore they, in this broader definition of atzei besamim, they fall in. That's the Ritva. The Rashba, on the other hand, his opinion is that we make a bracha on besamim, on fragrances. The word atzei refers to the trees. But Bore Atzibisomim is one who creates fragrant trees. So the same guidelines that we use for determining Bore Priya Eitz are used in determining the bracha Bore Atzibisomim, and then jasmine, and this thing called Shibolas Nerd or Spikenard, they fall within the guidelines of trees. And therefore, they are called Borei Priya Eitz. So he's learning that these what we thought were Asavim are really, at the end of the day, Eitzim. Go figure that one out. Now, Omer of Misharsha, Hai Narkom. So now, once again, we're talking about something that has a beautiful smell. In Hebrew, Narkom is translated as Chavatzelet HaSharon, which I believe in English is a rose bush. Everybody knows that a rose has a very fragrant odor, but we're talking about a flower. And it depends, Rav Misharsha said, where did it grow? Digi nu nisa, if it grew in a gina, in a garden, then mevarchani luye, bore, atze besomim. It's very tough. And therefore, like we said before about Chilfa Diyamo, a Simlak, you make a Bor Atze B'Somen. But the Davra, if it's out there in the fields, it's not in a garden, is then it's Rach, it's soft, and the Bracha would be Borei Asve B'Somen. So in the garden we have the hard stalks, and therefore it's Borei Asve B'Somen. Those that grow out there in the Sodeh, they have soft stems, and they're not classified as Atzei B'Somim, therefore the bracha is Asvei B'Somim. He quotes here a Rashba in the Tshuvas, that HaGodel Begino Navod Umashkinoso. In other words, since it's growing in your garden, therefore you do lots of work and you irrigate it, the afsha eitz of misyabesh, miskayim lishana bud, has a lifespan and will live to the next year. If it's out there in the fields and you're not irrigating it, is then misyabesh ke'esav, it's like grass that just withers up and dries up and dies, and therefore it doesn't deserve, if it's out there in the sada, what the Gemara calls the davra, it doesn't deserve Borei Atzei B'Somim. We make the bracha Borei Asvei B'Somim. Omer Rav Sheshes Hani Sigli, which are translated into Hebrew as Dudaim, and the English translation has it as violets. So I guess another kind of flower called a violet, not a rose, but a violet. Violets are rose are red, violets are blue. I don't know what color violets are. Anyway, Varchan Alayu Borei Asve B'Somim, which apparently indicates that they are soft. And this is the explanation that we've given until now. The Shitim Kubetzis has a little bit of a different take on this, to differentiate between an ace of rach and an ace of kosher, as far as the brach of reach is concerned. And it's enough if we can just simply call it an ace, and a davar kosher is called an ace, b'loshe b'nei adam. But as far as birchas haperos, that's not enough. It's not enough that b'loshe b'nei adam we call it an ace, but rather it's got to have an official status as an eitz, I guess you'd say. Priya gadol agabi esev kosher. If you had a fruit that grows on one of these kinds of tough, strong asovim grasses, you'd make a borei priya hadama. You could not make a borei priya eitz, because borei priya eitz is on peros ha'ilon, and an esev is never called an ilon, even if it's very tough. However, there are other Rishonim who learn, the Rashba amongst them, that we don't make a bracha of Borei Atzei B'Somim unless it's a Dovr Sheshbo Gidrei Ilan, as we mentioned earlier. It's got to have a status of Ilan as far as Birchas HaPeros in order to recite the bracha of Borei Atze Besamim. And an Ilan is defined as something that produces for a full year, and he calls it Anaf Shemiskayim Mishana Lashana V'Chozer Umotzi Piros, from 1 year to the next. So the Esav Kosha has a bracha of Borei Asve B'Samim because it's not called an Ilan. And then we had the case of Simlak and Chilfei Diyama, which we said was Shibolas Nerd or Spikenard. And in those cases, the Gemara says you make Borei Atzi B'Samim because they have the getter of an Ilan, because they last from year to year, and that's the Shitas HaRajba over here. Omar Arzutra Haiman de Morach be Esroga, somebody who smells an Esrog, or Chavusha, which is called a quince, and these fruits have a very good taste, a very good smell, and for that matter, any pre that has, that is on the one hand edible, but it has a good smell, Omer Baruch Shenosan Reach Tov Beperos. We make a Birchas Areach on Peros, but he has to grab the fruit into his hand, the Poskim say, Tosus points us out, Dibra Maskel Hai, and he has to grab it for the purpose of smelling it. If he grabs it for the purpose of eating it, and then he smells it, he's not going to make a bracha on the Reach, but unless he has a double machshava, let's say he grabs it to both smell it and eat it, then he would make a bracha, Notzein Reach Tov B'Peros, Notzein Reach Tov B'Peros, but if he only grabs it for the purpose of eating it, and then he decides he's going to smell it, he doesn't make a bracha. And all this is codified in Aruch Chaim Siman Reish Tes Zayin. And when it says here in the Gemara, Haiman Demorach Besroga, what it means is that he took it into his hands for the purpose of smelling it. And it means that you need something that has a L'shem Reach in it, you know, something that normally would be used as, you know, to enjoy the fragrant odor. Now, does it depend upon the netiya? In other words, what was the, you know, we've spoken very often about the concept of the planting. What was the purpose of its planting? So if you have a fruit tree that was planted for the purpose of eating the fruits, but not for the purpose of reach, you would not make a bracha on the reach, according to the Mishnah Berurah and Siman Reish Tes Zayin. And that's why in general it's rare for us to make this bracha. You probably haven't heard it too often, Nosein Reach, Nosan Reach Tov Beperos, because according to the Mishnah Berurah at least, it depends on what it was planted for. In most cases it was planted for Achila. So what would be if you had a pre that's on the table, you haven't taken it to your hands, and he smells it, he would not bake the bracha on it. So in other words, we have to have two conditions that are met in order to make this bracha, says the Mishnah Berurah. You would need, number one, that it was planted for the purpose of reach, and therefore the pre itself is omed l'reach, but you also need to take it into your hands for the purpose of smelling it. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Haiman did Nafik biyome de Nisan. This is when the fruits or the blossoms start blossoming on the trees. And that's the month of Nisan. V'chazi ilana de kamalavlave, and he sees in the days of Nisan a tree whose fruit begins to bloom. Omer, he should recite the following bracha. So when we say it begins to bloom, which is called lavluv or malavluve in conjugated verb, is yitzias haperach hagodel lifnei apri. So there's a flower that comes before the fruit, and that's a pasuk in Bamidbar, Perek Yud Zayin, v'yotzei perach. And Uncle says v'apek lavlevin. So if there are just leaves that are coming out, you don't make this brach that we're about to learn about. If the fruits already have, you know, it's a much later stage and the fruits already grown, that's going to be a major machlokes. But we're at the point where it's beyond the leaves; it's already up to the flower, if you will, the perach, but it's not yet a grown pre. Baruch shelo chiser ba'olamo klum. Ubarabo brios tovos vilanos tovos lis noes behen bnei adam. Now this bracha on livluv ha'etzim, which come nizman lizman, is on the gvuras Hashem, the great power of God, the might of God that becomes apparent when we begin to see the prachim on these trees that during the winter were totally dried up. And usually this process of livluv, of blooming or blossoming, takes place in the month of Nisan. Now, what happens if he would see this blossoming in a different month? So that's a discussion in the poskim. And some poskim think that the words Yemei Nisan should be interpreted as Tkufas Nisan, which is the, you know, that's already a 3-month period. So this is the bracha on the ilanos. I remember my father, Zichron Levracha, under Achupa, when my wife and I got married, that's quite a long time ago, he darshaned on this, the nusach of this bracha. He said that, you know, in this wonderful occasion, we should be making this bracha, so to speak. And we could just add one last word here that I wanted to suggest, and that is that we have a slightly different girsa in our sidurim. Instead of lihisnaos, which we have in our Gemara, we have a girsa of liahenos. And apparently in the Kisvei Yad of the Gemara, the old manuscripts, that is the original girsa, and that's how it's paskin in Shulchan Aruch. It should be lahanos. What are we up to now? Amar Mar Zutra Bar Tuvia Amar Rav. So that Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia is a Talmud of Rav, and very often he would say or transmit a Shmua in the name of his Rebbe Rav. The Gemara Bava Basra mentions Rav Mar Zutra Bar Tuvia in a Maisa, from which we learn that it seemed he lived in a later generation, so there maybe have been two different Amorahim with this name. Very interesting. Minayin Shemavarchem al Areach. What is the source in the Tanakh for the bracha on smelling? After all, in the case of Achila, he has Hanoh, he has Sviya, he has, it's Mazin, but in the case of Reach, you know, it's here today and gone tomorrow, so to speak. You know, it's very theoretical. Shenemar, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Kol HaNeshama Taliyah, and it sounds like the Neshama should be Mahal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a certain Hanoh of the Neshama. Hanoshe HaNeshama Nenes Mimenu. V'ezeh Dovash HaNeshama Nenes Mimenu. V'ein HaGuf Nenem Mimenu. Hevi Omer Zeh HaReach. So he makes a brach on Reach because it says Tahal El Ka. The Neshama should be Mahal for a certain kind of hanah that's unique to the neshama, and it's not hanah to the guf. Now, in the translation here, he writes, "He hanah krova biyosa lechelik haruchni vabehema shein lo neshama l'rak ruach v'ruachayim." although yesh lachush reach et ein a nenes mireach. That's what he says in the name of the Marsha. So an animal doesn't, although it has a sense of smell, but it doesn't get benefit from a smell. And I'm wondering out loud if we can somehow find, if anybody has any scientific, if you could Google this and find out if the scientists could tell us that that's one of the differences between a human being and an animal. Not in terms of intelligence here, but in terms of some sort of pleasure from smell. So again, what we're saying about smell is that this enjoyment is not tangible, it's not physical, but it rather is called a pleasure of the soul. It's more spiritual, it's ruchani, and in that sense, you don't know if the bracha is more important or less important. Perhaps it's in a sense more important because you can pass over smell without focusing. You know, at the beginning of the creation of man, it says vayipach bi'apov. Vayipach bi'apov, God blows into man a soul through his nostrils, bi'apov. So that might be a reference to the sense of smell, and we're talking about the creation of man. Now, many Rishonim point out that this drasha that we're saying, which is the basis for a bracha on the reich, is not a drasha gemur. It's only an asmachta. It's the bracha itself is only a takanas chachamim. And the question here is, we suggested at the beginning of this perek, if you recall, that also lehenos me'olam hazeh b'lo bracha. That's the source and the underlying reasoning for birchas hanenim on achila. Why does the Gemara feel compelled to bring a source, a pasuk for Birchas HaReach? Why don't we use the same svar that we can't enjoy the benefit of the world without a bracha? So for that, we really would have to learn more of the sugya of Me'ila. And in the Gemara Psachim, on Daf Chav Vav, the Gemara says that if you have Hegdesh and you smell the reach of Hegdesh, ein bo mishum me'ila, because reach ein bo mamish. So the whole Iser of Hanah mireach of Hegdesh is not a me'ila d'orais, it's an Iser Hanah d'rabbanon. So we could say perhaps that since in Kodshim, which is Kodshim Shamayim, there's no Iser Torah to have Hanah's reach, it's not me'ila on a d'orais level, then maybe the Chacham would not have been misakin a bracha on Hanah's reach. We're not talking about Kodshim anymore. So the Gemara wants to bring in a smachta from a pasuk that the Chachamim went ahead and made a takana to make a bracha on Reach. The Ramban says that the Chachamim did not make a takana unless it was Anosh and Ichneses Legufa Odom, and the Guf is Nenamina like Achil and Shesia. But he says that Anos HaReach Shu Nichnas Leguf V'Soed Oso, the reach somehow strengthens his body. We don't make a bracha on Hanos Rechitza if we go to a Schwitz, but we go into a spa. We don't make a bracha on breathing in air, because these Hanos don't really go into the goof itself, whereas the reach goes into the goof. The Omar. Another tradition of Marzutra in the name of Rav, Asidim Bachure Yisrael. We have an edition here of a text in the Ksav Yad that says Shalotamu Tam Chet Sheyitnu Reach Tov, which means like the Reach of Har HaLevanon. Levanon is the name of a place where there's a forest, and it has a reach tov because of the various prachim, the flowers, and the olim, and the branches that give off leaves, and they grow there on Har HaLevanon. Shenemar, we're talking about the nevuah of Hoshea Novi on the Asid Lavo, when Klal Yisrael do tshuva, tshuva Shleimel says, Yelchu Yon Kosov Vihi Kezayis Hodo V'reach Lo Kalvanon. So this pasuk, which we'll translate into English, his young shall go forth, and his beauty shall be like the olive tree, his aroma like the Lebanon. So we're talking about a zayis, or an olive tree, and is going to be a reach tov kilavanon. The Navi is telling us, Shuva Yisrael ad Hashem Elokecha, and promises the people of Israel that after the Tshuva Shlema, Yelchu Yon Kosov, etc. Yon Kosov is a reference to Bachuri Yisrael, Miloshan Yonik V'Chochom. The Radak in Hoshea says that Yitnu Reach Tov Kilvanon means that there'll be a name, a good name that'll go across the world, will fly, a great reputation. The Marsha explains that will be Zocha to Milos Ruchnius in Chochma, and we find in Yeshayahu Anovi the Loshen of Reach HaReverichu B'Yiras Hashem. Reach is Yiras Hashem. And others say that Asidim Bachuri Soshlo Tomu Tam Chet, and it refers or alludes, if you will, to the nature of a zayis, of an olive tree, because I Efshar La Kivo Imin Acher, there's something about an olive tree that doesn't lend itself to cross breeding. And the pasuk is telling me that Im Yelchu Yon Kosov, which means the Bachurim, Viehi Ki Zayis Hodo, then there'll be a reach lo kilavanon kiyiratzon. Omar Rav Zutra, another tradition of Rav Zutra transmitting the Torah of Rav, Maidich Siv, what does it mean in Koheles when we talk about God's creations in this world as hakol osa yofa beito? And we'll translate that into "He made everything beautiful in its time." Is Malamed? This teaches us Shekol Echad V'Echad, every human being Yipolo Hakadosh Baruch Hu Umnaso Befiv. In other words, the craft or the contribution, the unique umnus of each people would appear beautiful in his own eyes. Even Misha Osek B'Malacha B'Zuya. Like, for example, a tanner where there's a bad smell, but nevertheless he, in his mind, in his vision, sees it as malachto yofa b'enov. It's beautiful in his eyes. And this obviously is a psychological health that God made the world in that way, that a person, even if he's dedicated to malacha b'zuyos, nevertheless, every malach is important, and it gives a person a sense of self and accomplishment. Take a look at Rashi, Dira Masli Yofa. And the Gemara darshins from a pasuk. Here it's Es HaKol Osa Yofa Ve'ito. Because you could have asked, is every single Bria really Yofa? There are things that aren't aesthetically appealing. But even things that aren't appealing in the person, in the eyes of the person who's dedicated to work with them, they are considered yofim. Now the pasuk says be'ito, and what that means is that at the point in which the gzera is made up in heaven, that this is the person's umnus that'll have to be getted to, there's also gzera that umnus should be beautiful in his eyes. And when the world needs that particular contribution, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes that malacha beautiful in the eyes of he who is dedicated to the malacha, so that God will create a situation in which that malacha will be a major contribution and will need this person to make that contribution. Omar of Papa Hainu Diyami Inshi. This is kind of the idiomatic, popular phrase amongst people. Tlele Kora L'Dover Acher. Dover Acher is an acronym for a pig. And people use this phrase that you could hang a Kora. Kora is what we call in English a palm shoot around the neck of a swine. Now, the swine is going to ew the day of it. In other words, he's going to roll around in refuse. That's what a swine is known for. But if you hang a palm shoot on the neck of a pig and you expect that he'll eat it in cleanliness, he's going to nevertheless do his own thing. He's going to roll around in a garbage dump. And so too, the nimshal, as the Gemara is using it, is that a person who's osek in a melacha bzuya, even if you would give him parnas in a different way that's more mechubah, nevertheless he would continue with his own melacha bzuya, because it's so na'a b'yenav. It's so beautiful in his eyes. So for example, you talk about a tanner, and he enjoys his work despite the fact that it's foul-smelling. And this is part of human nature. So every craft has its role, and the world shouldn't be lacking in any of these types of crafts. So everything is beautiful in its time. God created each individual in a way that whatever his particular occupation would be, he would find it pleasing. And that's really a pella. Each person has a natural, innate inclination for a particular type of work, and God put that inclination into each person so he derives pleasure from his occupation. And even if he drags the palm shoot, as we say, through the dung heaps, nevertheless, this is a wondrous phenomenon that each person has an inclination towards that type of work. Now we get to a Gemara about going out at night alone in the darkness. And that's not a very good idea. The Gemara at the end of Pesachim tells us that at night there are mazikim, which could be interpreted in two ways. Perhaps it's something like a demon, which is metaphysical, it's above nature, or perhaps it means the dark natural dangers of darkness. You know, you just trip and fall. Or Mar Zutra, Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia Amar Rav. Now we see Rav Zutra as a Talmud of Rav telling us something about going out in the darkness. Is Avuka Kishnaim V'Yareach Kishlosha. So if you go out on your own, then it's a real danger because of the mazikin. But if you go out with an avuka, with a torch, then it's considered like two people. So it's not such a sakana. And yareach, if there's light coming from the moon, then it's kishlosh, as if there are three people here. Now there's a difference between two and three as far as shmirah mimazikin, as the Gemara is going to clarify just around the corner. Iboilahu, the Gemara now raises a suffix with regard to Rav. What did Rav mean when he said avuka kishnayin? Bahadi didei, o dilma vukishnaim lebar mididei. Is it bahadi didei, together with he himself? In other words, the avuka, together with him, are sachakol shnaim. So the avuka itself is like one additional person. O dilma, well, maybe what he meant was that avuka itself is kishnaim lebar mididei, even without him. So that means that together with the avuka, he's considered like three. And we'll see the difference between two and three in a minute. Toshma, let's take a look at Rav. Rav says, Yareach kishlosha. Now, iamit bishlama, if you're going to tell me that avuka kishnaim v'yareach kishlosha means bahadi didei means that we add another person for the torch, and we add two people for the moonlight, is sharper. Then we understand, because since there's a mila, there's a special advantage of two people as far as shmirim and azikin, and there's even a great advantage of three. So then it makes sense what Rav says: the avuka is equivalent to two people, you plus the avuka, and the areach is two plus you is three. So now we have the special mila of three above two. Ela imamrit, if you're going to tell me lebar mididei, meaning the Avuka Kishnayim means the Avuka itself is considered like Shnayim, and then with him himself it's three, and the Yerech is Shlosha, therefore the Yerech is like three, and with him it's four, is our Baal Lomel. You know, what's the Mila of jumping from three to four? We don't know that four is any different. You know, it's the Mila of Lomorid as far as the Mazik is concerned. So the Echad, in the case of one, this is going to be the Gemara's answer. In the case of one person, he's going alone, is nira umazik lo. He can see the mazik appears and will chas shalom damage him, attack him. Lishnayim, if there are two people going, nira but ain't no mazik. The mazik is there, but it doesn't have any power. Lishloshe in a nira kol ikar. Oh, so therefore, what we have here is we've maxed it out at three then. Now this is not an answer to the Gemara's Kasha, this is all part of the Gemara's Kasha. Because you've already maxed it out with the Mila of three, where it's Eino Nira Kol Ika, which we'll try to explain. But the fourth doesn't seem to add anything, and therefore Elilav Shmamina, the final conclusion in the Gemara's Sofik is that Avuki Kishnai Bahadi Didei. In other words, it's two all told with the Holech himself, that the Avuka is like one extra person, and then in the case of the moon, which is like moonlight, which is like two extra people, together with him, you reach the level of three, which means it's Eino Nira Kol Ikar. So let's suggest that when we say that an avuka is kishnayim lebar mididei, which means three, then we don't know what the moon adds. The Gemara's final conclusion is bahari didei. So what's this max out protection of three, which we said eino nira kol ikar? And the impression you get is that this mazik will not have any action, won't take any action to harm, and the person might suffer the impacts of having seen a demon. So there are two issues in a confrontation encounter with a demon, with a mazik. One is that the mazik will damage him, will harm him, and the other is that just simply the fear or the, you know, the psychological impact of the shock of seeing a demon, that scares him, that engenders a psychological phobia or shake-up, and that itself is damaging on a psychological level, despite the fact that the mazik has no power to destroy him. So when we max out at three, he won't even be aware of the mazik, so he won't be overwhelmed by any fear. But there's no addition, no advantage to four over three. Now the Gemara quotes a statement about the Iser and the severity of the Iser to embarrass someone. Again, we're talking about the transmission of Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia in the name of Rav. The Amri Le, others say it was Rav China Bar Bizna in the name of Shimon Chassid. The Amri Le, there's another transmission possibly of names of Omar Rav Yochanan in the name of Rav Shim Bar Yochai. This is a very famous statement in the Gemara. Noach lo liodam shiyapil atzmo tol kivshin ha'esh. A person should be better off if he throws himself into a fire. V'al yal bin p'nei chaveru baram, rather than humiliate a person publicly. Minolan, how do we know this? Shenemar. And this is in the parasha of Tamar and Yehuda. Yehuda had no idea that Tamar was pregnant from him, and he thought that she was like a Shomeris Yavam, and therefore she deserved to die because she had a relationship with someone else. Yes, she was pregnant. So that was a kind of a Znus relationship. And the pasuk says, when they took her out to be burnt at the stake, it says, he mutzes, v'hi, I'll read the whole passage, v'hi sholcha es chamiya lemar le'isha shar eila lo anochi hara v'tomer hakerna l'miach hosemes v'apsilim v'amate ha'eila. So she's about to be executed, and she sends the simonim, right? Leisha Shar Eile, in a secretive kind of a way, and when they take her out to be burnt at the stake, she sends these simonim to Yehuda, and now the ball's in Yehuda's turf. She's basically saying, look, the Balas Simonim, he's the one who made me pregnant. She didn't say explicitly or publicize that these Simonim are Yehuda's Simonim, and she's pregnant to him. And she was thinking out loud, if Yehuda will be Moda, then she'll be saved. If on the other hand he won't be Moda, he doesn't want to humiliate himself, she's not going to say it explicitly and prove publicly based on this obvious simon that he was the one. He'll be embarrassed, he'll be publicly humiliated. So it's better if I die in the Kivshan Aish, just not to be Malbim Pnei Chavero Barabim. Now one could ask, how do you know that she could have saved herself by humiliating him? Maybe she thought that, if he wants to be Moda by himself, then she'll be saved. If he won't be Moda, but how do you know for sure that she could have saved herself? And the answer is because she had the goods, she had the proof, she had the simonim. And instead of sending him publicly, she sent him privately through a shliach. Now, in the footnote, he quotes a Ben Yehoyada, that there was a yeshiva's Bezdin, and Bezdin certainly were judging her, and they were investigating to see if she had Znus Mirtzona, whether she really had to be executed or not. Now, initially, in the first part of the Bezdin, she didn't say anything about Miyahuda Heresi, that he's the one. Now, if she's Motzeis L'Sreifa, as the Pasuk says, she's now being taken out to be burnt at the stake. If at that point she would say something to Dayanim that it was Yehuda, nobody would believe her at all. So for the fact that Mitchila in the Bezdin, she was quiet, that's already indicative of the fact that she was willing to give up her life to be burnt at the stake rather than shaming Yehuda in public, because shaming a person in public is sometimes more painful than death itself. Now there's a machlokas rishonim between Tosus on the one hand and the Meiri on the other hand. Tosus of the opinion that, is it really true that there's a chiyuv, as the Gemara seems to say, to be mapil atzmo lekivshanis rather than not be mal b'pnei chavero baram? Tosus says that this is a chiyuv. Very hard to imagine a person living up to fulfill that chiyuv, but in any event, that's what Tosus seems to assume. This is now not here, but in Sota Daf Yudamid Beis. And the reason for the chiyuv is because Shvichas Domim is one of the three cardinal sins for which Yehareg Val Yava. The Meiri on the other hand says that, look at the Gemara's language. It says, Noach Loli Adam. Now, the Gemara is just trying to make us aware of the Chumras HaIsur here, how terrible of an Isur it is to humiliate a person. But the Gemara never meant that this is Mesiris Nefesh and comes under Ritzicha and Shvichas Domim. So what it might mean is, the Rambam is of the opinion that a person either has to give up his life or he's not allowed to give up his life. It could be, according to the Miri at least, that in this case it's a matter of choice. The halacha would allow you to give up your life in such a way. It's kind of a quasi, almost Ritzicha. It's not a chiyuv Ritzicha mamish of the big three, but even in the absence of the chiyuv, there's a definite license and a kiyum of giving up your life. Now we're getting back to the laws of the bracha of a reach, and we're talking about the seder kedima. Let's say, for example, you have both shemen or you have hadas, and the question is, which comes first? Tana rabbanan, heviu lefanov shemen afarsimon, which we said was the oil of a balsam, losuch bo yadov, lahaver mihem es zuamas hamachol. So what they did was, at the end of the meal, you would dip your fingers into the shemen afarsimon, and you would make a bracha borei shemen orev, if you remember the sugi that we learned back on daf mem gimel min aleph. And veheviu, also they would bring hadas to smell the hadas, and then he made the bracha borei atzei besamim. So now, what should you make the bracha on first? Should it be a bracha on the shemen, in this case shemen afarsimon, which would be borei shemen orev, or should he first make the bracha on the smelling of the hadas, which is borei atzei besamim? Beit Shammai omrim mevorech al hashemen v'yachach mevorech al hadas. Beit Hillel omrim mevorech al hadas v'yachach mevorech al hashemen. So what is this machlokus all about? Beit Shammai hold that we should be makdim the bracha on the shemen because that's more choshev than the hadas, and it gets a more chashivus of a bracha, maybe because it's more of a specific bracha in which you mention the word shemen, borei shemen orev. Beis Hillel, on the other hand, hold that we should be makdim in the bracha on hadas because from its very birth, from its very creation, the hadas is made for smelling. It has a beautiful smell. That's the guf of the hadas. You know, the afarsimon is a whole process in which you put the afarsimon into oil, and the oil absorbs the smell of the afarsimon, and so forth and so on. And the reich is not inherent in the afarsimon, but rather in the shemen, and therefore there's a shina mibriyoso. This is a machlokes between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. Omar Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel says the following: Ani achria. He's going to make achra. Achra means you have weight on two sides of a scale. He's going to weigh in for Beis Shammai. And how so? Because I'm going to explain the reasoning of the shita of Beit Shammai. Shemen zachinu l'reach v'zachinu l'sicha. In the case of shemen, we have a double hanah from the shemen. Number one, the smell, the fragrant odor. Once the balsam was soaking in the shemen. And we also is zocha to sicha because he's dipping his fingers into the shemen and he's cleansing his fingers. But hadas is la nosreich zochina, but sicha is lo zochina. There's no double hana, right? There's no sicha in a hadas, certainly not. And since he gets a double hana from the shemen, that should come first, and therefore Rav Gamliel weighs in favor of Beit Shammai. Om Rabbi Yochanan Halacha Kedivrei HaMachria, we should pasken like Rabbi Gamliel, who was Machria in favor of Beit Shammai. Now here the Mefarshim are asking the question, why does Rabbi Yochanan feel compelled to teach us that Halacha is Kedivrei HaMachria? Rabbi Yochanan himself in Shabbos Daf Lamed Tesam Beis says that's a klal. Kol Mokum Shata Motzi Shnayim Chalukim V'Echad Machria is Halacha Kedivrei HaMachria. And Tosus and Psochem suggests that although this is a klal in general, that if we have a Tana who's Machria, and he takes some of this and some of that, and he finds a compromise, then we apply the principle of Halacha Kedivrei Machria. This Machria here is a little bit different. He's passing completely like one of the two Tzadim, in this case like Beit Shammai, and here we don't apply the principle of Halacha Kedivrei HaMachria. Now Rashi says that they brought Shemen out, Losuch es Yodov, Lahavir es Zuam Asa Michael, and apparently Rashi understood that this was the minug at the end of a Suda, and that's why they brought out the Shemen. And we're talking about Shemen Afarsimon. And the bracha of Shemen Afarsimon, as we said, is Borei Shemen Orev. Even when he's just doing sikh on his yadayim. Now, In other oils, we make a bracha of borei atzei besamim. And again, we only make that bracha if they brought it l'shem reach, specifically for that purpose. There would be no question of seder kedima and brachos in the case of hadas and other shmonim, because they're all equal. They're all the same in halacha. Borei atzei besamim. Tosus holds here, the Ramaskal Shemen, that they brought the Shemen for the purpose of Reach. If, on the other hand, we were talking about Shemen Afar Simon, and they brought out other Shmonim together with Birchas Hadas, then all the Shmonim have the same Bracha as Birchas Hadas, that's for a Atzei besomim, and the Gemara would not vacillate as to which bracha would come first. Here we have Hevius Hashem lo riach bo, and therefore it gets a special bracha. Again, Tosus, I think, also agrees that we're talking about Shemen Afar Simon. He's not arguing with Rashi on that part, but I think where he's arguing with Rashi is that whereas Rashi understands they brought the Shemen for Sicha, and that puts the situation of the Bracha on the Shemen on a superior level vis-a-vis the Hadas, because the Hadas doesn't have this extra Hanov Sicha, Tosus, I think, is putting the emphasis on the special Bracha that they were Mesakin on Reach of Shemen, and Tosus might be implying that you would not necessarily make this bracha if the shemen was brought out to the table because of cleaning the hands. And Tosus couldn't accept Rashi's pshat of Hevius HaShemen Kidei Lahavre Zumas HaOchlin, because in such case the Gemara establishes later on Daf Nun Gimel that you don't make a bracha in such a case on the shemen. Rashi, on the other hand, understood that if they brought Shemen Losuch as Yadov, then because it says Heviu Lefon of Shemen Vadas, and Rashi understands that the minig was to bring the Shemen out at the end of the Suda, so Rashi found it difficult to understand that in the case of Hadas, we found that they brought it out for Reach, but why would they bring Shemen out at the end of the meal, and therefore he understood that the minig was to bring the shemen losuch as yadov. But the problem is that we saw in the Gemara later on that you don't make a brach on shemen which was not for the purpose of reach. So the Bach explains that we're talking about shemen afar simon that has its own bracha called borei shemen orev, as we saw in Omer Aleph. And when the Gemara says later on Nun Gimel that we don't make a bracha on Reach Shel Shemen, which is coming Lahavris Azuma, Rashi says over there, that's Shemen Shemavarchin Olav Borei Atzei Besamim. He's not talking about a Afar Simon where we make a Borei Shemen Orev. Now, why there should be a difference, and because of the special bracha Borei Shemen Orev, you should make a bracha even when it's brought simply to rinse his fingers off, to cleanse him of the zuam of ochlin, that's not absolutely clear. Rav Papa Ikla lebe Rav Huna bere de Rav Ika. Rav Papa was invited to that Beis Medrash of Rav Huna, the son of Rav Ika, Aisul Kamei. The Kamayu, they brought in front of them Shemen Vahadas. Shekal Rav Papa Ubarach Hadas Bereisha. Rav Papa took the Hadas first, and that would be an application of Beis Hillel's Shita. Vahada Baruch HaShemen, and only afterwards he made the Baruch and the Reach HaShemen. Amalei, so Rav Huna says to Mar, Lo Sovalei Mar, didn't you agree that halacha kedivrei Amachria, the halacha is like Rav Gamliel, who accepted the sheet of Beit Shammai, and therefore we should be making the bracha first on the Shemen and only afterwards on the Hadas. Amalei, so Rav Papa responded to Rav Huna, Hachi Amar Rav halacha ke Beis Hillel, that we make a bracha on Beis Hillel, but the Gemara is, and we accept Beis Hillel to make the bracha first on the Hadas, not like Rav Gamliel. Velohi, the Gemara says that that which Rav Papa says in the name of Rava, that halacha is like Beis Hillel, that's not correct. Halacha is kedivrei Machria, and we make a bracha on the Shemen first. And what Rav Papa said was l'shtamutei nafshei hu diavid. He was only saying this in order to be mishtamet. We'll try to explain what this means, that he wanted to extricate himself from an embarrassing predicament. And what this means, and again the big kash is, how could he do this and lie? And maybe some of the people who are watching him would think that the halacha is this way, that you should that should paschal like Beis Hillel, make the bracha first on the Hadas. So the Ben Yoyod has a long explanation. He says that there were two groups in front of him, spectators. There were the Chachamim and also the Amei Oretz. Now the Chachamim understood and would understand in Halacha that he was just changing the truth, but the reason he did that is Shelo Yisbayesh. They understood that the Halacha was like Beit Shammai, in this case, like Rav Gamliel's Hachra. And they knew that that the reason why Rav Papa said what he said, meaning that he heard from Rava Kaviyochel that halacha is like Beis Hillel, is that he didn't want to be embarrassed and say I made a mistake in this case. Now, on the other hand, as far as the Amei Oretz is concerned, there's no chashash takola, because they don't pay attention to the Dvar Halacha. They're not going to think that because he said in the name of Rav the Halacha is Beis Hillel, that the Halacha is going to be established like Beis Hillel. And in this case, it's kind of a, shall we say, like a Meshanan Mipnei Sholem kind of situation. Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa, Heviu Lefanov. They brought in front of him Shemen Afar Simon, Los, Rashi says again, Losuch Bo Esiyadayim, so he's going to now cleanse his hands, but it also has a Reach Tov, for Yayin, and they brought him also wine for drinking after the Mazot, after he ate the main course of the Mazot. We're not talking about a Kosher Bracha, we're talking about during the weekday. On Shabbos, a person could be Koveh Suda on his Yayin, and he doesn't necessarily have to make another bracha liachar amazon. That's as far as Shabbos is concerned, because the yayin, the birchas hayayin at the beginning of the meal in Shabbos would pater him up from a birchas hayayin at the end of the meal. But we're talking now about the weekday. And now he has two brachas to recite. He's got a borei shemen orev on the reach hashem, and he's got a borei pri hagafen on the He holds the shemen in his right hand because he's going to make that bracha first, and he picks up the yayin in his left hand. And anything that he wants to make a bracha on for achila purposes or for smelling purposes, he should hold it in his right hand when he makes the bracha. And that's in order to be mechavin libo on that which he's being mevarech. So the yamin always has more chashivus, and therefore first he's got to take the shemen biyamino, because that's where he's going to make the bracha first. And when he takes the yayin in his left hand, that's not mitzad hadin, but rather since he is at the end of his suda, and they were already mesalik the shulchan, he's got to pick up both of them in his hands, because there's no shulchan upon which he can place them down. So therefore he picks up the shemen on which he's going to make the first bracha in his right hand, and the yayin in his left hand on which he's going to make the bracha secondly. and therefore mevarech al hashemen on the reich the shemen borei shemen oriv, and then chosim varech al yain borei pri agof, and beisul amrim ochis a yain biad yamino ves hashemen biyasam varech al yain vechoser umevarech al shemen borei shemen oriv. Now, what are they arguing about? Beit Shammai hold that you should be makdim the brach on the shemen because the hanah of reach ba'a me'elov, it comes to him automatically. He doesn't do a maisa to smell it. It comes through his nostrils. Yain, on the other hand, requires a maisa that he should be nene from it. And he's not going to be nene until he drinks it. So Beit Shammai say that you should make the bracha on that hanah which comes first. Beis Hill, on the other hand, want to make the bracha on the yayin first because the hanah of yayin is so much more choshev, it's more profound, it goes right into his body. Hanah's reach, as we said, is very, very conceptual. Now, just like they argue in the Seder HaBracha, which bracha should come first, the reach Hashem or the shtiyas yayin, they would argue, this is the Mishnah Berurah, he says, b'chol bracha l'achilu shesia, ha'imi kodemes l'birchas ha'reach. Now, if that be the case, then perhaps this would apply, not because he's passive and the reach comes into his nose first, even if he's going into the room or whatever, he's prepared to make the bracha on achil and shesia, or on reach, depending upon the shitas of Beis Hillel Beit Shammai, and that's because perhaps the hanah of achil and shesia, as Rabbi Beis Hillel would argue, is more profound, or perhaps the hanah of reach is special because it goes into his neshama. The Meiri writes that according to Beis Hillel, afterwards when he makes the bracha on the shemen, he doesn't have to pick up the shemen in his right hand. It's enough that he continues holding on to the shemen in his left hand as he did at the outset. But the Torah says that he should switch it around from his left over to his right hand. Now the Braisa adds another din. What should he do after Sichas Hayadayim B'Shemen Mevusam? After he does the Sicha Tocho B'Rosh Hashamosh. Now we're talking about a Talmud Chacham. And we're going to have a whole discussion about a Talmud Chacham. It's a gnai for a Talmud Chacham to put on smelling salts on his body in order to give a fragrant odor. That's not something that's appropriate for a Talmud Chacham. So now, after he's cleansed his hands with his shemen, and he already made a bracha on the shemen, borei shemen orev, that's wonderful, but now he has to sort of get rid of the fragrance from his hands. So what does he do? Tocho barosh ha-shamash. And the shamash, who's his second in command, who's his servant, so to speak, is very excited about the fact that he's getting this wonderful smell on his head that's coming from a Talmud Chacham. But im shamash Talmud Chacham, but what if it's the shamash himself is a Talmud Chacham? Then it's a little bit below the dignity of the Talmud Chacham that this Talmud Chacham is putting his hands on his head and giving him the fragrance, is then Tocho Bakosel. What he's going to do is take his hands and wipe them on the wall so that hopefully the Shemen will go onto the wall and he won't go out there with a strong fragrant odor. He's not going to put it on the Rosh Hashamash Bnei Shignai, the Talmud Chacham Lotzeis L'Shuk Shumivusam. So all this is to take the smell off him. He shouldn't go out in public Mivusam. Now, the Gemara later on is going to mention a machlokes as to whether or not a Talmud Chacham is allowed to go out mevusam besaro if he has something very fragrant, some sort of oil or whatever it is in his scalp, in his hair. Now, according to the Man Yomer, who says it's mutter, here we must be talking about a case where he's going to be metiach yada bekovo shel shamash. There would be no issue about putting it on, or for that matter, putting on his own head, because we have a problem of begodim mivusamim. Everybody agrees that's usur for Talmud Chacham to go out in the if the begodim are mivusamim. And even if we're matir, in the case of Seir, according to one man diyomar, then they were only matir in Seir haguf. in the body itself. There's no sweat in the head, but there's sweat in the body, and therefore that sweat will somehow neutralize the fragrant odor of the bosem. But in Seira Rosh, where there's no Zeya Mitsuya, there's no not much sweating up there in the head, then even in the Rosh, even when you put it on the head, it's a Dover, it's a Magula, it's Nikar, it's a Dover Maguna. And when the Gemara uses the language in Talmud Chacham Hu, it means that from the beginning we were talking about a Shamash who's not a Talmud Chacham. And even though later on in the Gemara we're going to see that Beis Hillel says you're not allowed to mishtamesh b'shamash hamaretz, in general you shouldn't ask a person to serve you if he's an hamaretz, here we're not talking about an hamaretz, we're just talking about someone who's in the middle stage, he's in the twilight zone, he's not an hamaretz, but he's not a Talmud Chacham. Tana Rabban and Shisha Dvarim Gnailo L'Talmud Chacham, the six things that are not appropriate for a Talmud Chacham. And these are all sort of the ethics that address the Talmud Chacham. Some of them, as we'll see on the list, and there may be more than six on the list, right now we know of six, are not ethical so much, but they might have to do with danger and so forth. But we'll see as we go through. But these are unbecoming for a Torah scholar. And the first on the list is Al Yetze Kishahu Mevusam Lashuk. He's perfumed, he doesn't go out to the Shuk. Al Yetze Yechidi Balayla. The Gemara is going to go through these categories, why each one is unbecoming for a Talmud Chacham. He shouldn't go out alone at night. Al Yetze Bin Min Olim Hamid Tuloyim. He shouldn't go out with shoes that are ripped, that have patches on them, which is called Tloy B'Godim. And then Al Yisaper Im Isha Bashuk, he shouldn't be conversing with a woman in the street. We'll see, even perhaps close relatives. V'Al Yosef, he shouldn't sit in a Suda, or recline literally in a Suda, V'Chabura Shal Amei Ha'aretz, with a group of ignoramuses. V'Al Yikones Bachrona LeBeis HaMedrash, he shouldn't be late in coming into the Beis HaMedrash. And Yesh Omrim, others add to this six, Aflo Yafsia Psia Gasa, he shouldn't take large strides, V'al Yahalech Bekomas Kufa, he shouldn't stand in an erect posture. So let's go through each one of these six categories, one by one, and see if we could knock them off, and figure out why this is unbecoming for a Talmud Chacham. Now we're going to see that some of these are Mipnei HaChashad, and if that be the case, we're not sure why, you know, if he's doing something that looks and it will arouse the suspicion, people accuse him or think of him in some sort of way, we should think that should be something that should address every Jew, not just the Talmud Chacham. No Jew is allowed to put himself in a situation of chashad. The pasuk says in Bamidbar Lamed Beis, V'yisem Nekiyim Hashem Yisrael. But perhaps the spectator will always be dan lekaf schus. But in the case of a Talmud Chacham, we're not going to take any chances here. Maybe Rov Bnei are the most spectators. Your average spectator would be dan lekaf schus, but there's always those cynical, muted people who are chashdanim, you know, they're choshesh, and they will danim l'kaf choven. In the case of Talmud Chacham, there's too much at stake here. So the first category is k'shu al yetzik k'shu mevusam lashuk omer av abba bereid rav chiyo bar avam rav yochanan b'mokom shechashudim al mishkav zohar. Interesting. That we're talking about a place where there is, I guess you'd say, homosexuality is a little bit more common, and for a man to go out with this fragrant spell might arouse suspicion that he's engaged in this kind of behavior. Just one second. I lost the place for a second. Here it is. b'mokom shechashudim al mishkav zohar. I guess, I don't know, I'm not sure why Rashi says that by wearing perfume, if a man wears perfume, he wants to entice other men. I don't know why, it's not a chashad of women that he wants to entice women. I guess in those days, a man would not entice a woman just because he wore perfume. I'm not sure that's true today. But in any event, Omer Rav Sheshes Lo Amaron, when we said that Talmid Chacham shouldn't go out in the shuk if he's mevusam, ela bibigdo. Aval begufo ma'abrele, you know, as we said that the sweat of his body is going to neutralize the smell, the perfume smell on his body. But in case of beged, then there's a serious sort of long-lasting smell on his beged, fragrance of the perfume. You know, this is all has to do with aftershave. Amar Rav Papa, Hamavusam Besaro Kimavusam Bibigdo Dummy. The hair which doesn't have hair on his head, which doesn't have sweat in normal cases, therefore it's as if he had the perfume on his begotten. The Amrile, others disagree and they say Kimavusam Bigufo Dummy. And he's allowed to go out in the shuk if he has this perfume on his head. Al yetzi yechidi balayla mishum chashado. Once again, we're talking about chashad, that if he's walking around in the dark night, then what's he doing? Is he looking for some sort of promiscuous behavior? V'lo amarin elo delo kviyole idna. If he has a chavrusa, b'kviyus, again, I don't know how the people know about this, then it's not a problem. Kvile idna, then he's allowed to go yichidi balayla. Meide yadi dile idne ka'azil. Everybody knows that he's going to learn Torah with his kvius, with his chavrusa, and they're not going to suspect him that he's out there looking for promiscuous behavior. Again, we have to worry about mazikin. I guess we're talking probably about a place where there are no mazikin, whatever that means. But this Gemara is worried about chashad. And if there's no chashad, like in the case where he has a kvius, then it's mutter. Perhaps that's only limited to the city itself, where the people in an urban location are out there in the streets, and therefore there's no mazikin. But if he's out there beyond the city limits, then even though he has a Talmud Chacham to learn with and a Chavrusa to learn with, and there's no Chashada, but there might be still outside the city Mazikin, unless you want to apply the principle of Shluchei Mitzvah Einam Nizakin, and therefore since he's going for his Talmud, for his learning purposes, there's no Chash Mazikin, Shluchei Mitzvah Einam Nizakin, there's only a Chashad problem, and therefore if he's going out there to learn B'kviyas, there's no issue of chashad. It's common knowledge that he has this set period of time to learn. Again, I'm not exactly sure how everyone knows that, but maybe people should be daven l'kav zchus. But as we said before, we're always afraid of the miut that aren't going to be daven l'kav zchus. Al yetze b'min olim hametuloim. So he's got patches on his shoes. And the issue, the Gemara says, Misayale li Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, the Omer Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Ginaihu li, where am I? Ginaihu li Talmid Chacham, Sheyetzev b'mnol metulayim. It's a Gnai, it's something unbecoming for it. Eini, the Gemara asks, why is this a Gnai to go out in Minolim metulayim? I'll bring you a proof, Ahalo, Vaha, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Nafik, he went out with Min Olam Mitulayim. He was a Talmud Chacham. Why wasn't he worried about this? Omer Bar Zutra, Bereid Rav Nachman, what we said, that you shouldn't go out with Min Olam Mitulayim with these patches on your shoes, that's B'tlai Al Gabi T'lai. In other words, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba went out with Min Olam Mitulayim B'tlai Echad. But the unbecoming unrecommended shoes for a Talmud Chacham are Tlai Al Gabi Tlai. Now, in order to explain this, we're going to have to look at the note here in the Masifta, and he says Tlai Al Gabi Tlai is a Gnai Gadol, but Tlai Echad is not so much of a Gnai. And there's an Iser Bal Tashchis, not to throw out a pair of shoes. So if you only have one tlai, one patch, that's not enough to warrant throwing out the pair of shoes. So for the sake of Bal Tashchis, we're going to allow him to wear these shoes. But if it's already a tlai al gabi tlai, that's not Bal Tashchis, and Faker, that's a Gnai. So this is one patch on top of the other. And then we have Lo Amaron, another limitation in this Lo Yetzi B'Tlai Agavi Tlai, Ella B'Fanta, which means B'Fnei Hamin, it's on the front side of his shoe, like towards the front side of his foot. Aval B'Gilda, if it's, let's say, a patch on the heel of his shoe, and he steps on it, so it's not nira, leslan ba, and you're allowed to wear such a shoe. Ubefanta, if it's on the front part of his shoe, lo amaron ela biorcha, only if he's out there in the public, avol bebeisin, in the privacy of his home, leslan ba. So he's allowed to walk around in his house with even this minnow that has patches on the front. Lo amaron, and even if he's got a patch on his front and he's out there in public, that's only bimos hachama when people go out in the streets, bimos hachshomim leslan ba. We have no chashash, because in the bimos hachshomim there's so much mud that'll cover up his shoes. Again, they didn't have galoshes, I guess, and if it's not nira libnei adam. Al yisapir isha bashuk amrav chizda afilu hi ishto. He shouldn't be talking with his wife in the shuk. Tanya Nami Hochi, we learned that way in a braisa. Afilu hi ishto, afilu hi bito, his own daughter, afilu achosa, his sister, lefisha ena kol bekiyim bekrovosov. Not everyone knows who his relatives are, and they may suspect that this is a strange woman, and they'll be choshing him. Why is he going around with this woman and talking to her? During a suit in particular, where there's a lot of talk and gossip, and who knows what they're talking, it would have an influence on him. It would somehow touch on his soul, and therefore he might even imitate them. He's got to be very careful. They'll say about him, he's a lazy bones. Why is he coming late to the base medrash? Omrim aflo yasia psia gasa. The Omar mar psia gasa no tells echad michamesh meos mimor enov shal adam. You know, if he's walking very quickly, it takes away 1/500 of the light in his eyes, of his sight. And again, in the case of the Talmud Chacham, that people need him to check out colors and so forth. And so he has the paskin shas. He should make sure that his eyesight is excellent. My takante, what can he do if he needs to be posea psia gasa? Is there any way that he can somehow return the light to his eyes? Is lahadre b'kiddusha debe shimshay? If he drinks the wine of Kiddush on Friday night, that's going to bring back the mi'or into his eyes. Al yahalich b'komas kufa, di omar mar, hamahalich b'komas kufa, afilu arba amos, even if he walks 4 amos, is kilu dochek, ragli ashchino. You know, he's making himself a big shot, he's walking with his head proud, and that's going to be dochek, ragli ashchino, dichsiv, because it says in the Pasuk, Melochal Haaretz Kivodo. Just as we're ending the shir, just add a few points about not sitting with Chabura. If he sits separately, that's not Osur. Or for example, the Bir Halacha says if he's sitting there to teach them, he wants to be mechazik them in mitzvahs, then we're not choshesh. Adarabha, he's influencing them, not the other way around. And as far as coming late to the base medrash, I mean, that's really an asur for everyone. But in the case of Talmud Chacham, even if he has a reasoning, a very good explanation as to why he's late, let's say he's busy with his learning here, or he was busy with other mitzvahs, nevertheless he has to be very careful about the possibility that people will consider him a poshea, and that would be a chil Hashem perhaps. As far as Psi Agas is concerned, we said that that would apply actually to everyone, but the Ben Yoyoda says that in the case of a Talmud Chacham, it's even a Gnai, because when Shalos get asked him, he doesn't have good eyesight, he won't be able to answer them. And the Gemara says that what's the Takana for someone who is a Talmud Chacham, who wants to get his eyesight back, he should look at the Kiddush. Some say that that means that he should take from the yayin of the Kiddush and put it into his eyes as a refuah. The Maril, on the other hand, says that while he's being Mekadish, he take a look at the Nero Shabbos. And the reason for that Nero Shabbos is that if you take the word Ner, it's actually 250. If you look at the two Neros, then you get to 500, and it's Machzir one of 500 to his eyesight. The Rambam actually quotes this Maril in Or HaChaim in Siman Reish Ayin Aleph. And finally, why is the Kiddush itself the mitzvah that's meshiv li'odah meir einayim? And some say it's derived from the pasuk in Tehillim, mitzvah Hashem bara me'iras einayim. And it's very interesting that the word mitzvah is in the singular, me'iras is also in the singular. And we should learn that, and we're not referring to, you know, all the mitzvahs or any of the mitzvahs that we're talking about, but rather it's mitzvah Hashem. This is the mitzvah of God. What does that mean, the mitzvah of God? The pasuk says in Shmos Perek Lamed Aleph, "Ubiyom Hashvi Shavas Vayinofash," referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the mitzvah that, in a very outstanding way, God Himself is Mekayim, is the mitzvah of Shabbos, "Ubiyom Hashvi Shavas Vayinofash," and therefore it's called Mitzvah Hashem. And the Kabbalah says Shabbos is really on the coast of Kiddush, as the Gemara says later on in Daf Nun Aleph. So when he's Mekayim the Mitzvah Hashem, which is the Shabbos that he drinks for the Kos of Yayin, that's going to be Me'iras Einayim, as the Pasuk says. Is Mitzvah Hashem Bara Me'iras Einayim. Now again, the Iser is on anyone to walk in a Komas Kufa, but again, in the case of a Talmud Chacham, it's a particular kind of Chil Hashem if he shows that Gaiva by walking erect, as if he's a big shot. So we're going to end the shiur here, such that the next shiur, Mirza Shem, will begin in the Mishnah on the top of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph.